All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Torah Studies. This is our weekly exploration of the Torah portion. Torah portion this week, it's a doubleheader. Trick question. Matos and Maaseh. Okay, so it's going to be a math-heavy discussion. You guys ready for math-heavy discussion? You guys brought your number two pencils? Yes? 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 Everybody's got their equipment? Okay. Before we jump into the discussion in the Torah, we need to start off with some math jokes, right? Obviously, right? If we're doing a class on math, it's got to be Torah and math. Okay, you ready? Why should you never talk to pi?
Because it will never end.
Oh, good, because it'll go on forever. Excellent. Look at you. That's very good. That's very good. Listen, this is a really good one. We'll go on forever because pi goes on. Okay, why? There you go. Why do teenagers travel in groups of three? Because they can't even. That's a great one. You have to be a teenager to really like appreciate it. Okay, hold on. Oh, so there was a farmer who counted 196 cows in the field, but when he rounded them up, he had 200. Okay, I think we're going to end with that one. So this week's Torah portions, again, Matos Maaseh, fascinating ideas that we are going to cover with very practical messages about life and about miracles and about nature and about mitzvahs and Torah and God and us and all that good stuff. So let's open up the Chumash, please. Torah portion, first of the two, Matos, is going to be our major discussion. You can find it in the Gunag edition, beginning on page 1075. Okay, so the Torah portion begins with a discussion about vows. If someone takes a vow, the Torah discusses the severity or the importance and the binding nature of us keeping our words, our pledges. So that's the first point in the Torah portion. Torah talks about how to get out of a vow, how to annul a vow. That's annulling a marriage or divorce a marriage. This is more of a verbal pledge. You make a pledge, whatever it is, whatever the pledge is. And if a person wishes to get out of that pledge, so there's a process to annul the vow, which the Torah describes in detail. Then the next narrative is the one that we're going to pick up. So look at page 1079. So here we have God's command to the Jewish people, through Moshe, to wage battle, to wage war against the nation of Midian. Why against Midian? Who are the Midianites? What do we know about them recently in the Torah? What did they do? Ah, exactly, the Pinchas episode. Remember, Midian sent their daughters, their women, to entice the Jewish men, etc., in immorality, and that caused a great plague to break out. 24,000 Jews died, and it ended with Pinchas killing Zimri and Cosby, that whole episode. Okay, so now, before Moshe's passing, God says, one more task at hand, and that is waging war against Midian. Ray, please. Oh, one thing to mention. Ray, happy birthday. Happy almost birthday. Happy Erev birthday. Please get us started. Chapter 31 of the Book of Numbers. But who's counting? Page 1079.
The war against Midian. In contest to other wars.
You see where it says God. Right in the main text. God spoke.
God spoke to Moshe saying, take revenge against the Midianites for the children of Israel. After that, you will be gathered to your people.
So let me jump in for a second. God says, lead the people into battle against Midian, and afterwards, after that's done, you will be gathered to your people. You know what that's a euphemism for? Yeah, you're going to pass away. Imagine, God is telling Moshe, here is what you need to do, and after you're done, what's going to happen? You're going to die. Now, a person that might hear that, okay, this is the last thing that you're going to do, and after that, it's going to be over. How might you proceed?
Slowly.
schlep it out, right? It's like, oh, Midian, oh, where are we going to find them? Where are we going to get the soldiers, the provisions? You know, it's complicated. There's red tape. God, give me a few years. We'll get together the army. We'll get together the intelligence. We'll get together the game plan. We'll get together the armaments. And then we'll go into battle, etc. You would think, he'll schlep it out to get some more years. Not Moshe. Immediately. Continue.
Moshe immediately spoke to the people, saying, "From among yourselves, get men armed and ready for combat against Midian, to carry out God's revenge against Midian. You should send for the army, 1,000 from each tribe, 1,000 from each tribe. This applies to all the tribes of Israel."
So what we see here is Moshe does not procrastinate. He doesn't push it off. He immediately gets down to work and puts the call out to all the tribes, "Give me 1,000 soldiers, 12,000 in total, and they go to war." Let's skip that paragraph, and please go to the next paragraph, beginning with verse number 7.
Yeah, but he said that twice, and usually it's...
Yeah, what he means is from each tribe. 1,000 per tribe, 1,000 per tribe. The repetition is indicative of the fact that each tribe is equal, and you should repeat it 12 times.
Okay. You want me to go to Beit
Yeah, they besiege, yeah.
"They besiege Midian as God had commanded Moshe, and they killed every male. They killed the Midianite kings who fell upon their own people's corpses. The 5 kings of Midian that they killed were Evi, Rechem, Sur, Hor, and Reba. They killed Bilam, the son of Beor, with a sword."
Look at that. Remember Bilam? That's Balaam. That's the prophet. "They killed him also in this battle." So they went and destroyed Midian, and they also killed Bilam/Balaam, who was the evil prophet. Now, let's continue. Let's actually not... Well, we won't continue inside. I'm going to paraphrase the next little bit. The Torah continues to say that in battle, the Jewish soldiers also ended up with a lot of spoils of war. They ended up with animals, and they ended up also with captives, human beings. Okay, let's continue. Let's turn a few pages and continue on page 1083. 1083. Here we have the instructions regarding what to do with the spoils of war. Ray, please continue. It's going to get a little bit math heavy, but don't worry. After opening jokes, you all are ready for this. All right, take it away.
"God spoke to Moshe, saying, 'Calculate the total plunder of the captured people and animals. You should do this together with Eleazar, the priest, and the community's paternal tribal leaders. Divide the plunder equally between the soldiers that went out to battle and the rest of the entire congregation.'"
So look what he says. Let's go through this slowly. One second. He says, "Calculate the total plunder of people and animals, and it should be divided 50-50 between the soldiers that actually went out to battle, the 12,000 soldiers, and the rest of the people that stayed home." Now, you might think, well, the people that stayed home, why should they get anything? What do they do? Well, you can't have people that go out to battle if your homestead is not being watched. So although maybe it's not an equal participation on one level, on another level, you do need people staying home and tending to the home front as well. So you need soldiers that are out there, and you also need people remaining back at home. So the spoils are divided 50-50. Obviously, there are more people that are at home, so each person gets less, as opposed to 12,000 soldiers, right? 600,000 people, right? So there's a lot more people at home than went out to war. Nonetheless, this is how it's divided 50-50. Continue 1085, and here we get into some heavier math.
"You should take a tax for God from the soldiers who went out to battle, from the people, from the cattle, donkeys, and sheep. Take one individual from every 500. Take this from their half of the plunder and give it to Eleazar, the priest, as a gift to God.
Let's break this down. So God says, 50-50 to the soldier, 50% to the soldiers, 50% of the spoils to the rest of the people. Let's focus on the soldiers. Once you've divided it in half, and now the soldiers get their half of the plunder. Take one out of every 500 people, cattle, donkeys, and sheep. One out of 500 is how, what's the percentage on that? 0.2. 0.2% of the total number of people, cattle, donkeys, and sheep. You take that and you give it to Eleazar the priest as a gift to God. Now, what happens to it once it's given to Eleazar? And what does it mean that it's a gift to God? Well, that's its own discussion, and we'll leave that aside for a second. The bottom line is, this is going to be a gift from the soldiers, from what they've accrued through this process. Their 50%, they're going to in turn give a tribute back to Eleazar the high priest, and to Hashem, they're going to give back one of 500, a percentage of 0.2. Let's continue. What about the other half that the people get? The Torah explains.
From the half belonging to the children of Israel, take 1/50th of the people, cattle, donkeys, sheep, and all the animals, and give them to the Levites, the guardians of God's tabernacle.
So from the half that goes to the people, to the children of Israel, the ones that stayed home, they don't give one out of every 500. They don't give 0.2%. They have to give a whopping 2%. One out of every 50. Correct? That's 2%. Their tax, their tribute, if you will, is 2%. And who does it go to? It doesn't go to Eleazar the Kohen, to God. It rather goes to the Levites, the guardian of God's tabernacle. So again, you have a total number of the plunder of war. People, cattle, sheep, donkeys, etc. Take the total number, divide it in half between the soldiers and the rest of the people. The soldiers take their half and give one out of every 500 to the Kohen. And the rest of the people, one out of every 50 of these spoils, and it goes to the Levites. Make sense so far? Yes? Okay. Now, let's continue and look at the next verse, verse 31.
Moshe and Eleazar, the priests, did what God had commanded Moshe.
They did it. They divided it. They subdivide. Once they divided 50-50, they then gave, they helped the people give the right amount, etc. The Torah does not stop here. The Torah continues to break it down with the numbers. Continue, and here we have the exact totals. By the way, in your Torah studies text, in case you're wondering how you're going to follow all these numbers, so in your Torah studies text, you'll find a chart that has all of the numbers, easy to read, easy to break down. It's on page 28 in your books. So we can look at that in a moment, but wait, not yet, not yet. Let's read it first inside in the verses, because we have a lot of questions to ask, and then we're going to look at the chart just as a clarification tool. So please begin now with verse 32.
The total plunder, in addition to the spoils that the army had taken as spoils from inanimate objects that were not taxable, was 675,000 sheep.
That's a lot of sheep. Look at that, 675,000 sheep.
Right. 72,000 cattle, 61,000 donkeys, and people. The total number of the women who had not experienced sleeping with a man was 32,000.
So the young women, etc., that were captured in the battle were 32,000, plus 61,000 donkeys, 72,000 cattle, 675,000 sheep, etc., a total of about 840,000 items. Not items, I mean, there are people there as well, but 840,000 units, if you will, that were captured in this battle. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of items. A lot of objects and units. 1087, please continue. The Torah continues to do the math for us.
Thus, these were the taxes from the half that was apportioned to those who went out to battle. The number of sheep was 337,000.
In other words, that was half of the total amount of sheep that were taken, so that half went to the soldiers, 337,500. Continue.
Thus, the God from the sheep was 675.
Which is 0.2.
36,000 cattle, of which the tax to God was 72. 30,500 donkeys, of which the tax to God was 61. 16,000 people, of which the tax to God was 32 people. Moshe gave the tax, which was a gift to God, to Eleazar, the priest, as God had commanded Moshe.
So let's pause here for a second. The Torah has just enumerated in very specific detail the total tally, how much was taken, how much went to the soldiers, and then, based on that number, what the 1 in 500 tally was. So when it comes to the sheep, the total that has to be given as a tribute to Eleazar the Kohen and to Hashem, 675. The cattle, 72. The donkeys, 61. And the people, 32.
I just wonder what they're going to do with the people.
I have the same question. I'm not sure.
And the animals.
They definitely have to do that. I'm not sure what exactly happens at that point. I'm sure it's discussed somewhere. Anyway, all right, we'll have to look that up. Let's continue. Continue, please, with verse number 42.
The following was a calculation from the half allotted to the children of Israel, which Moshe had divided from the men who had gone into the army.
In other words, now this is the other half. So half went to the soldiers, and then the soldiers took their half and gave the tribute, 1 in 500, to Eleazar the Kohen and Hashem. And now the other half. Let's continue.
The community's half consisted of 337,500 sheep, 36,000 cattle, 30,500 donkeys, and 16,000 people. Moshe took 1/50th of the children of Israel's half from the people and the animals and gave them to the Levites, the guardians of God's tabernacle.
Everything makes sense? Do you see the lack of symmetry? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's asymmetrical here?
It doesn't say the tax.
Correct. You notice when it came to the half that the soldiers got? It talks about how much that half was. And then it says the calculation of what 1 in 500 turned out to be. How many sheep were actually given? How many cattle? How many donkeys? How many people were actually given as a tribute to Eleazar the Kohen and to Hashem? When it comes to the half of the people, it's not symmetrical. It talks about the total half that was given to them, but it doesn't enumerate what the number looks like when you calculate 1 in 50. It just says that then they took 1 out of 50 and gave it to the Levites. But it doesn't spell out the number. When it comes to the... You with me on the question? It's a glaring question. When it comes to the half of the soldiers, the Torah enumerates not only the total half that they got, but the amount of tribute that they gave. When it comes to the people, it only talks about what they got. And the fact that they gave a tribute, but it doesn't specify the number. Numerous biblical commentaries throughout the ages have asked this question. It's like we like symmetry. We like symmetry in poetry, in art, in music. There's symmetry. There's a certain balance that feels comfortable. And then when things aren't right, when things aren't balanced, it feels uncomfortable. It's like, you know, the story that Dr. Tursky shares about the fellow who lives in an apartment building in New York City. And the apartment building is, the walls are paper thin. And this fellow has had a long day. And he finally, he has a long night also. He's working on something. He finally goes to bed. And he's tired. And all he wants is a good night's sleep. And he just wants quiet. And as soon as he lays down in bed, he hears the door, the apartment door open. Not his apartment door, but he hears the building door open. It must have been a smaller building. And he hears his upstairs neighbor. He can tell that walk, that walk, and then up the stairs. And this guy lives directly above him, and he's hearing every slow step and thought, and it's driving him crazy. He's like, "Hurry up!" In his mind, he's saying, "Hurry up and just go and stop making the noise so I can go to sleep." And he hears the fellow approach his door and the keys jangle and the lock turns and he walks in and the coat goes on. He hears every single detail. And he hears the man make his way over to his bedroom, the fellow's bedroom upstairs, which is right above his bedroom. And he hears noise, the clomping and the banging. And then he hears the man sit down on his bed. And he hears the sound. It's unmistakable. He hears the sound of a shoe being tossed onto the floor. And he knows that he's one shoe away from quiet. And he's waiting, and he's waiting, and he's waiting, and he's waiting. And there's no second shoe. And now he for sure can't go to sleep because he's waiting for the other shoe to drop. So he's out of his mind. He gets dressed. He goes out of his apartment, goes upstairs, knocks on his neighbor's door and says, "Will you throw the other shoe to the floor already?" And the man says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize. I realized that it was probably rude to throw one shoe, so I placed the second one down lightly and gently." Anyway, that's the end of the story. The point is, oftentimes in life, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Right? We like symmetry. If one shoe drops, we want the other one to drop also. Even if it's a little bit, even if it drives us crazy, at least there's symmetry. So the Torah here, in very, very, explicit detail, the Torah talks about exactly the total number of each of these four categories. And then what number, if you have it, if you cut it in half, what that number is. Now, we could have done the math, but the Torah says, no, we're going to spell it out. 300,000 plus cattle and this, right? The Torah tells us what those numbers are. And then regarding the soldiers, it spells out exactly the amount of tribute and tax they paid. 1 out of 500. But what that number was. And herein lies the lack of symmetry. The Torah does not do that for the people. We're left hanging. The Torah says, well, that's the half that they got. And then they paid the tribute. You can't do that to me. Give me the numbers. How much? I can do the math, but I don't want to do the math. You've done the math for me until now. Now you give me one formula to figure out on my own. So take a look. The Torah Studies text, page 28. Here you have a wonderful chart. Page 28. And the chart delineates exactly the numbers. So look in the column of sheep. The sheep column. Total, 675,000. Soldiers got 50%, 337,500. 337,500. The tax of that, 675. Given to Elazar. The civilians also got 337,500. Their tax, however, was exactly one extra digit space, right? So instead of 675, it was 6,750, and they gave it to the Levites. The cow, 72,000, divided in half is 36,000. The tribute for the soldiers was 72. The tribute for the civilians was 720. The donkeys, 61,000 in total, 30,500 for each. 61 donkeys as a tax to the soldiers, 610 for the civilians. And the people, 32,000 in total, 16,000 each, 32 a tribute to the for the soldiers, and 320 a tribute for the civilians. Okay. But again, the major question that we find here is, why in the world does the Torah not give us, if you look in these columns, the second to last line in each of these columns, that number is 6,750 sheep, 720 cows, 610 donkeys, 320 people. That's not delineated. The question is why? Okay. To understand this, again, there are many, many commentators that ask this question, and thus there are several different answers. We're going to present what is a very unique answer. And the answer is given by the Ragachav Ragon, who is a sage, a rabbi that we've spoken about lately in several of these classes. So the Ragachav Ragon gives a wonderful explanation that connects the narrative in this week's Torah portion regarding the war and the spoils and the tribute to the Jewish mitzvah, the biblical command to give truma. Let me explain. Let's take a step back. Remember, the Kohanim and the Levim, the priests and the Levites, they did not have a day job. They worked in the temple. They served the people. They weren't allowed to own land and have farms, that sort of thing, right? So how are the Levites supported? And how are the Kohanim, the priests, supported? They were supported by the people. Specifically, here's how it broke down. The Levites were the beneficiaries of something called Maaser. Maaser. What is Maaser? It's translated as a tithe. 10%. 10% of the produce, the grain, etc. 10% of the stuff, of the average, the general Jewish populace, non-Kohanim and Levim, 10% was given to the Levites. What did the Kohanim, what did the priests get? They got something else. They didn't get Maaser, they got Truma. What is Truma? Truma is the first. The first of the grain. The first of the shearing. The first of the cattle. Okay? But there's no number associated with it. How much is it? What's the first? If I tell you to give 10% of your total produce that you've grown in your farm, right? We're speaking about produce, right? 10%. So you can quantify 10%. If I told you that you have to give the first that grows, how much is that? The first individual piece? The first day's worth? Like, what's the number? The first? Is the first little piece?
The first harvest.
The whole first harvest? How long is the harvest? Right? I mean, I'm literally asking. I don't know how long a harvest is. You keep on harvesting every day. So is it the first day? Is it the first hour of that first day? Is it the first actual piece of cucumber? Is it the first cucumber? There's no definition. Now, I want to show you the ambiguity in the Torah text itself. So take your Gunei Kedushin Chumash and look in Deuteronomy 18. Look in Devarim Perek Yud Ches. Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 18. I'll tell you what page it's on. It is on page 1244 and 1245. 1245. Look at verse number 3. Right in the middle of the page, 1245. Lolly, please read this one, 1245, verse number 3. Apparently, these were gifts. It's like, hey, I have a jaw with a tongue for you. It's like, whoa, do I know you? Like, what's... Okay, but anyway, this is how the Torah describes what the people give to the priest. Let's continue.
You should give him truma, which is the first portion of your grain, your wine, and your oil.
You see what it says? The first portion. Again, what's the first portion? It's not quantified. Continue. First shearings. How much are the first shearings? First animal? The first set of animals? The first day's worth of shear? You know what shear? I mean, shearing is you take the sheep, right? You shear the sheep. So what's the first shearing? How much? Right? How much are we fleecing the people? Oh, man. Oh, that just happened. All right, verse number 5, last one. So the Torah gives a rationale why the Kohen, why the priest gets these benefits, because he was chosen, he serves God, etc. for all time. Wonderful. That doesn't help us quantify what Truma is. You tell me a tenth, you're giving me a number. You tell me the first, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. So, this is not an us problem. This is a problem that the rabbis, the sages, figured out thousands and thousands of years ago. And they said, we need to quantify this. It's not quantified in the Torah, so the sages went ahead and quantified it. So let's start looking at how our sages formulated this. Text number 2. Sarah, please read this. This is on page 29 in the Torah Studies text. See what he says? See what Rambam says? Maimonides says? Literally, theoretically, based on the biblical text, the Torah says the first of your grain. Okay, God, you want me to give the Kohen the first of my grain? There you go. First of my grain. One kernel. Done. Rambam says, yeah, that could do it. I mean, that's fulfilling what the Torah says. Continue.
A generous measure is 1/40 of the crop. The average measure is 1/50, and a parsimonious measure is 1/60.
Okay, so Rambam says, Maimonides says, and he's quoting the sages, this is discussed in the Talmud. Maimonides says that although there's no number in Torah, and theoretically you can discharge your obligation of Truma even with one kernel of grain, he says nonetheless, what our sages established is a range, ranging from 1/40 down to 1/60. And the median is 1/50. How much is 1/50? 2%. 2%. 1 out of every 50, 2 out of every 100, 2%. Now, it gets even more interesting. Maimonides continues, text number 3. And Maimonides says something that that I think you'll find counterintuitive. Steve, please read this one.
One should not separate this truma with a measure, a scale, or by number, because the Torah did not specify a measure for this allocation. Instead, one makes an estimation and separates 1/50 according to his conception.
You see what Maimonides says? Since the Torah doesn't tell us 1/50, it just says the first, and the sages came along and said, yeah, about 1/50, give or take. So Rambam says, therefore, when you give 1/50 to the Kohen, don't measure it. Don't be so precise. Precision is left to what Torah tells us to be precise about. Being that this is a range that the sages set up, don't be overly, you know, specific with this measurement. Estimate. You know, estimate. Make sense? So it's a little bit counterintuitive. Okay. Now, I'll ask you the following question. Where did the sages get the notion that Truma should be 1/50? What's the precedent? From this episode in our Torah portion. Think about it. If you're giving an amount, well, a tenth is Meiser, the tithe is a tenth. Where do you get the number 1/50? It's like such a random number. It's not so random. In our story, in this week's Torah portion, the Jews go to battle against Midian, and the soldiers collect all of this, all these spoils of war, and the plunder, the animals, the cattle, the sheep, the donkeys, the people, the young women. They collect all of these spoils. And the Torah says, and we talked about this, take everything, divide it to half. Half goes to the soldiers and half to the people who stayed behind. And the people who stayed behind need to in turn give a tribute to the Levites for how much? 1/50. And so the sages, when trying to come up with a number that made sense for Truma, they didn't base it on this biblical narrative, completely. In other words, they can't say that Truma is equivalent to the story of the battle against Midian, because that's not what that is. That wasn't Truma. Nonetheless, they did what we call an asmachta. It's an Aramaic word. Asmachta means kind of like leaning or finding support from. They found support from a biblical narrative that's not necessarily so perfectly related. In other words, it's a different story, but since it talks about giving a tribute and paying a certain percentage, so they use that as a basis for their takana, for their decree. Make sense? So it's not biblical. The number, the amount, 1/50th for truma, for the priest, is not biblical. But it's an asmachta, it's kind of utilizing another biblical precedent to find that number. Based on all of this, the Rugachever has an unbelievable insight. The Rugachever Gaon has an unbelievable insight. Rabbi Yosef Rosen. Remember, he's the one that was a Nasir. If he cut his hair, it would hurt. He was such a brilliant scholar. Okay. The Rebbe said that he would be pained on Shabbos. He would feel anxiety on Shabbat. Why? It's a day of rest, tranquility. No. He was, because when he would study, he would come up with all these new insights and he couldn't write it down. And that bothered him because he knew after Shabbat he would forget, because his mind raced. He was such a creative, he was really a truly creative thinker. And so this is an example of his creative thought. He says, look, the story in our Torah portion talks about the tribute of the people, 1/50th, right? The people that stay behind, 1/50th. What's the halacha? What's the law regarding truma? Do you measure it or you don't measure it? It's not specified, right? It's not specified. Remember, there was an asymmetry in the story. Which tribute wasn't specified? Which tribute of the spoils of war was not specified down to the number of what the tribute was? The soldiers or the people? The people, the 1/50th. You see how the Rugachever connects the two? He says, look, truma, which is unspecified, is based on our story with the people's tribute from the war. And that was also unspecified. Oh, it's a perfect shidduch, it's a perfect match. Let's read this inside text number 4. Dan, I think we're up to you. Text 4.
The Torah does not enumerate the amount that was actually paid to the Levites. The reason for this is because Tosafot and Terumo teach their verses on the scriptural source of the notion that Terumo is 1/50th. Now, Terumo is not allowed to be given back, as the Mishnah states clearly and in many other places. For this reason,
interesting, right? So here in our story about the spoils of war, the Torah does not specify the total number that was given. It only tells us a general percentage to allude. Again, it's not the exact scriptural origin, but to allude to the fact that truma, which is derived on some level from this story, is also not exactly precisely 1/50th, because you're not supposed to measure it. So that's the unmeasured. It's not really a tithe, because that's 10%. Tithe is 10%. It's the unmeasured gift. Truma is the unmeasured 1/50th gift. Our Torah story also talks about the undefined 2% gift that was given by the people to the Levites. Make sense? Okay. Any questions so far? All of this was the easy stuff. I told you it's heavy on math. We started off with some math jokes. I mean, it's heavy on math. Okay. But now we want to get into what lesson, what's the takeaway for us? Unbelievable stuff. But first, we have to ask another question. When you look at the story, something odd emerges. Were you wondering about the numbers that the Torah was giving us? Something strange? Did anything strike you strange about the numbers that the Torah gave us? Look back at the chart. Look back at the chart in your books on page 28. Was it 28? Yeah, page 28. What strikes you as odd?
It's all even.
Right, isn't that a little bit strange?
0, 0, 0.
Look how even that is. That was my joke about rounding up, right?
Everything except the taxes.
Right. Well, but it's also a whole number. It's exactly, okay, we're going to get to that point in a second. I want to point out another question, another interesting idea. And this is something that Nachmanides, the Ramban, points out. He says that from the time that the animals were taken as spoils of war, until the time that they divided it, and dividing hundreds of thousands of animals is not an easy task. I've never divided even two animals, but I'm assuming that if you divide 840,000 different units of things, you divide it amongst the soldiers and amongst the people, and then they have to in turn give a percentage, whether it's 0.2% or whether it's 2%, whatever it is. If you're doing all of that stuff, it takes a few days. And it's very unlikely that in the course of all of that, by natural means, that an animal or two shouldn't die. You would think, right? And yet, there's no record of the animals dying. On the contrary, it says, these are the animals, these are the numbers of the animals that were taken as plunder, and these are the ones that were given, and all the numbers are the same. There's no diminishment. So Nachmanides points out that this was almost a miracle. Text number 5. Anne, please read this. So Ramban, Nachmanides, in his commentary on these verses, on the story, he says the Torah enumerates the numbers in detail. How much was taken and how much was halved and then how much was given as a tribute to indicate to us that nothing at all diminished. Not one animal died, and that's a great miracle. So now the Rebbe asked the following question. It's a miracle. We're talking miracles now. One second. Nachmanides himself gives us a general rule when it comes to miracles. Text number 6. Look at Nachmanides. David.
God wishes to maintain the status quo of the natural order as much as possible. Nature is dear to God, and he does not tamper with it if not absolutely necessary.
This is a general rule that Judaism has, that God created the natural universe and embedded in it natural law, the laws of nature, and God does not, on a whim, say, hey, let's just change things up. Only in extenuating circumstances, certain situations, does God break the norms of nature and give us a miracle. But typically, God is not doing miracles unless it's absolutely necessary. Who wrote this? The very same Nachmanides, who just wrote in text number 5 that this was a miracle, which begs the question, to what end was this miracle? Why did God see to it that when it came to the plunder, the spoils of war, of the war of Midian, that God should create this miracle that no animal should die a natural death in between the time that they were taken as spoils of war until the time that they were divided and taxed and given as a tribute throughout that whole duration of that time? Not one animal was missing. Why? Why such a miracle? The Rebbe asked this question. Take a look at text number 7. The Rebbe asks another question. The Rebbe points out something else. I'm going to read this one. Listen to this. If the Torah would have only recorded God's command and simply stated that Moses carried it out with no further detail, in other words, had the Torah not specified any of the numbers, it could have just said that God said, divide it and tax it, and they did what they were told. Without giving me the number, do I need to know exactly how many cows and how many sheep? I don't need to know this. Why did the Torah do this? The cattle, I mean, not the cattle. The cattle and the sheep and the donkeys and the people. Why? Because had it not done so, a fundamental question in the basic narrative would have cropped up. Listen to this. Under normal circumstances, with such a large amount of human and livestock spoils, it's highly improbable that the number of each specific category would be so exact that when divided in half, it should equal exactly 50 or 500 without any remaining fraction. You see what the Rebbe is pointing out? Remember I told you to look back at the chart on page 28? You know what's remarkable about that? Not only that each one is an even number, it ends with a zero. That's not the only thing that's remarkable. What's remarkable is that when you look at the final tax, they were exactly in multiples of 50 or 500. It works perfectly. You don't have any remainders. Okay, well, you know, you have 6,749, and then you had like 30 extra cows or cattle that we just, or sheep that we didn't know what to do with. No. All of the sheep are accounted for, and they fit exactly into these segments of either 50 or 500 perfectly, seamlessly. The Rebbe says this, via natural means, is highly improbable. It's highly improbable that it should be divided exactly into multiples of 50 or 500 without any remaining fraction. Let's continue. The Rebbe continues to say, inasmuch as God levied a tax on the Jews in the amount of 1/50th from the civilian population and 1/500th or 1/1/500th from the soldiers, the Torah should have made it clear what they were to do with the remaining fractions that didn't fit exactly into those numbers. In other words, the Torah should have said, God should have said, look, here's what you're going to do. You're going to take the number, divide the total, divide it in half, and then give multiples of 50 or 500. 1 in 50, 1 in 500. Now, if there's a remainder, then don't worry about it. God should have said what to do with the remainder. God didn't say anything about the remainder. It is for this reason that Scripture enumerates everything in detail, to demonstrate that in this story, something remarkable happened. The numbers were so exact that the people were able to give the respective taxes of 1/50th and 1/500th without any remaining fraction. The Torah points out, why did God not discuss what to do with the extras? Because there weren't going to be any extras. God saw to it that it should work out perfectly. The Rebbe says, this is not what we would call a miracle. It's not impossible that this should happen in natural means. This happens to me sometimes, and I love when it happens. You ever check out at a supermarket? Oh, you're thinking this?
I know what you're thinking.
It's such a good feeling. Let's bring everyone into the... But let's bring everyone into the discussion. So what happens to us, to Lolly and I, right? Independently, what happens? What happens is you buy like 30 things. You have a shopping cart full of items. You're at the grocery store. And you check out. And then there's a discount and a Kroger card and a this and a plus tax and plus that. All of these things. And then at the end, your number ends up a nice round even number, right?
77 or 11/11.
Yeah, it's 77 or 11/11, or it's like 96.
$50.
Or it's 50, even better.
Oh, you mean
50.
Okay.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, either way, right? It's $50. It's like, no way. It's like, how did I buy, like, perfect amount of stuff and the right things. And, I mean, they weighed the cucumbers, the tomatoes, they weighed it. The grapes, they weighed the grapes. And that exact weight worked out to $50 perfectly. It's like, oh my gosh, I should play the lottery and just spend a few dollars and just, you know, waste it like that. So, or win, right? You gotta, all it takes, what was New York's motto? All it takes is a dollar and a dream. I love that. Or $2, depending on which game you're playing. Or five. Anyway, the point is that it's not impossible for numbers to work out in a nice symmetrical fashion. It's possible. So the Rebbe says like this, that everything worked out in whole numbers, divisible by 50 or 500, perfectly like that? Is it a miracle? Is it like the waters of the sea standing up like a wall so that the Israelites can pass? But no, it's not like a splitting of the sea miracle. It's the numbers worked out. But is it a very cool thing? It's a cool thing. It's nice. And it's obviously divinely orchestrated. It's not a miracle. It's not like an impossibility. But it's a very cool divine coordination. It's nice that that happened. So therefore, the Rebbe says, it's not a miracle, but it's a pretty nice thing that happened. Why? So that there shouldn't be any remaining digits. So that there shouldn't be any remaining cattle or sheep or donkeys or people that are not accounted for in the tribute. Think about it. Let's use our own numbers. Let's say you had 53 sheep, and you need to give 1 in 50. So how many are you giving? 1. And that 1 represents how many? 50. What about the other 3? They're not represented by the tribute. They're not represented by the gift to the Kohen or the priest, or the Levites. They're not represented in the gift. So they're kind of just hanging empty. The Rebbe explains this is why God orchestrated it in such a way that the numbers should be so perfectly exact and round and even to work out so nicely. Why? So that all of the spoils of war should be represented. Take a look at how the Rebbe explains it, text 9a. I'll read this one as well. Text 9a. The Rebbe says as follows. The explanation lies in the words of the verse. After God commanded the Jews, and you shall levy a tax for God from the soldiers, one soul out of every 500, etc. The verse repeats, you shall take their half. Now these words are superfluous. Why take their half? But the Rebbe explains from the fact that the verse stresses that the tax be taken from their half, it is clear that the tax coming from the 50 or 500 should come from the entire half, i.e. the entire portion received by that population, whether it be soldier or civilian. Should there be any remainder, that portion would not have been taxed. It would have been unrepresented by the tax. Again, had there been theoretically only 53 sheep, 3 would not have been represented. 1 in 50, it would not have represented the 3. So God says, divide it into half. And then from your half, give the tribute. What does it mean, from your half, give the tribute? The whole half should be represented in the tribute. The only way that could happen is if the numbers work out precisely. So the Rebbe says, again, the numbers worked out. That's why, as Nachmanides says, the Torah specifies the numbers. It didn't just say that the Jews did it. They divided into half and they gave the tribute. That they followed orders is wonderful, but the Torah is telling us something else. Not only did they follow orders, but that every single item was represented. You with me on this? Not only did the Jews follow orders, they divided it and then they gave the 50, 1 in 50 or 1 in 500. That's easy. You have one verse for that. The Jews did everything that God commanded. That's an easy verse. Why does the Torah give us all the numbers and then subdivide it into half and then give us the percentages, etc., spelling it out, at least on one side? Why? In order to hammer home this point that God orchestrated things, that nothing in the natural world should remain outside of this mitzvah. God wanted everything in this occurrence, in this story, to be involved in the mitzvah of the tribute, the mitzvah of this tzedakah, this gift that was given, 1 in 50 or 1 in 500, every item, every unit was represented in this. Let's continue text 9b. The Rebbe says, the reason for this matter was so that the Jews would be able to fulfill God's command. Thus, the amounts needed to be perfect, the civilian half equal to that of the soldier's half, without any remaining fractions. It worked. When you divide it 1 in 50 and 1 in 500, it worked perfectly. And the Rebbe says, what's the lesson? Text 9c, the lesson is obvious. A Jew's mitzvah is precious. So much so that extraordinary events that are completely uncommon, not necessarily a miracle, but wondrous things happen, just so that the Jew should be able to fulfill a mitzvah in the optimal manner. God does not just orchestrate events while the mitzvah is being performed, even before the mitzvah is actually fulfilled. God is pulling strings. That's a loose translation of the Rebbe's original, but whatever. God is pulling strings so that eventually, much later, the mitzvah could be fulfilled to its utmost. Look at our story. The people and cattle of Midian were exactly the number needed, and not a single one of them died for quite some time. The Rebbe says even more so. Listen to this. You see those dots, those 4 dots? I'll tell you what they cut out. I have the original right here. The Sicha. It's from this book. The Rebbe says, think about it. How did they end up with that total number of cattle or sheep or donkeys? How'd they end up with that? Because when they went into war with Midian, that's what was around and they took it. Do you understand what God did?
He made it so that the amount would be there.
He made it that the Midianites, before the war, that's the amount that they should own. Are you with me in this? The Rebbe says that when the Midianites went and they got animals or they bought animals or they sold animals, that the number should work out perfectly so that when ultimately when the Jews go to battle against the Midianites and defeat them in battle and take those spoils of war, the number should be perfect that they could do the mitzvah in the optimal fashion. Look how Hashem orchestrates the natural universe in such a way to aid and to assist in our fulfillment of the mitzvot. It's incredible. I titled the class in my email, Walking on Sunshine. I don't know. I don't know the song. I know the song. I don't know that I know all the details, all the lyrics. I'm walking on sunshine. Oh, right? However that goes. Right? I'm walking on sunshine? No? Yes, yes, we have a few yeses. Okay. Thank you all for corroborating this. So I don't know exactly, I don't know the lyrics, and I'm not taking any responsibility for what the lyrics actually are, but I know that line of the chorus, I'm walking on sunshine. Walking on sunshine, to me, what it evokes for me is that you're walking, everything is paved. Everything is the right way. It's you know what you need to be doing, and God is making sure that it's... that your path is okay. Behind the scenes, the Midianites, for years, how long did it take them to amass 675,000 sheep? That takes a few years. Behind the scenes, God is making sure that they should have exactly 675,000 sheep so that one day when the Jews come and go to war against them, the Jews should have that number so that when they divide it into half and each one has to give either 1/50th or 1/500th, that it should work out in whole numbers. I mean, that's incredible. That's how God orchestrates things. There are miracles that we can see. Sometimes something happens in your life or to someone that you love or know, and you say, you know what, that can't be explained. That's a miracle. And we identify it, and we become humbled by it, hopefully, and we acknowledge God, and it strengthens our faith. And that's wonderful. But this story reminds us that oftentimes, I would say most of the time, God's maneuverings happen beneath the surface. We don't see it. We don't see it. But it works out. It works out. It works out when you check out. This is, you know, tongue in cheek, right? Based on our previous. It works out when you go to the checkout and it's exactly $50. It just worked out. But that's maybe more by chance. But what we're saying here is that God has a way of working things out so that when we approach a situation that might otherwise have been challenging and it's not, and we take it for granted that our path, we were walking on sunshine. It was an easy path. How is it easy? Oh, we got exactly 675,000 animals and we can divide it and give the gift and no animals died and it's wonderful. We get to do the mitzvah. Take it for granted. Can't take anything for granted. It's a divine orchestration behind the scenes. So the message here is on many different levels. Number one, we shouldn't look at the world around us as an enemy or a foe. Recognize that God is the one who is pulling the strings. And like God did for the Jews in the times of the Midianite War, and like God does for us so often, more often than we can ever know, God orchestrates things to assist us in what we need to do. When we face a situation, when we encounter a situation, and it's a positive situation, we can make a difference in whatever it is, how do we get there? How did they get there? How did all of us get there? God made it happen. We don't think about it, but we should not take it for granted. You know, when we stumble, when there's an obstacle, we say, whoa, what's God doing? Okay, might be a valid question. But when the path is clear and all the numbers line up, let's remember it was God that was doing this. So number one, let's not be afraid of the world around us. God is pulling the strings. Number two, know that the world cannot be in opposition to God's will. God's creating everything, especially based on the doctrine of constant creation. God's creating everything at every moment. It can't get in the way. It might look like an obstacle, but it can't truly and objectively get in the way. It's just something that we need to work with or find a workaround. The final message is, let's thank God for all of those times that things work out. We should never take our success and our sure-footedness for granted. So, when the numbers line up, when all the math works out, let's pay a tribute to God and recognize the divine power behind a good day. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for Torah Studies.
Is that related to, like, sometimes you look back something that you accomplished and you say, how in the world did I do that?
Yeah, the humility would be, I did it a little bit. I showed up. God did it. God did it.